The SGGQA podcast is brought to you in part by One More. Treat your ears. One More's mission is to bring innovation, design, and quality to all music lovers, young or old, frugal or spendy. Offering an incredible collection of earbuds at all tiers of the market, cabled or Bluetooth, neckband or true wireless. Fantastic sound quality, top-tier tuning, excellent noise reduction. I've personally been a fan for a couple years now. Right now, my headphone of choice is the Dual Driver ANC Pro neckband. Great battery life, punchy dynamic sound, and crazy good noise reduction in a very convenient just drop your earbud neckband design. Or you can get those same features and completely cut the cords with the Dual Driver ANC True Wireless, one of the absolute best options in the completely cable-free space. Or maybe you want to fill a decently large room with a pair of One More portable Bluetooth speakers. There's a whole collection of great audio options for you to shop at affordable prices. And for listeners of this podcast, I can also do you one better. If you shop at onemore.com, use promo code SOMEGADGETGUY at checkout. Once again, SOMEGADGETGUY with no spaces. And you'll save an additional 20% on these already competitive prices. You'd spend over $80 less on One More's Dual Driver ANC True Wireless compared to that other brand's Pro earbuds. You know who I'm talking about. One More brings style, premium audio quality, and cool tech features to the table at prices that won't hurt the wallet. You can check out these multiple award-winning audio solutions at onemore.com, and remember to use promo code SOMEGADGETGUY at checkout to save big. Now, let's get on with the show. All right. I believe this means we are live. Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, tech fans of all shapes and sorts and sizes and persuasions, welcome to another Monday morning tech chat show on the SGGQA podcast channel. I'm Juan Carlos Bagnell, some gadget guy, the SGG of this terribly named, horrifically named podcast series. And the QA, of course, stands for question and answer. So we'd like to make this an interactive conversation, a discussion on the top tech stories that are hitting the industry, and a good chance for us to follow up on stories that we've been covering. I think all too often we get outraged by a headline and then we never really go to check out how that story unfolded after that initial outrage porn headline. That's why I like to host my podcast on a Monday. It gives us the last week and the weekend to kind of sort out our feelings on a top story, maybe some breaking news. We got a story from Gary the Fireman that there could be some interesting developments happening with a potential Pixel. We've got a super heavy gadget block this week. I always separate my shows, you know, like a lot of sort of tech and politics up front, and then gadgets and smartphones and reviews on the second half of the podcast. But before I jump into any of that, right now on the Twitch stream, because I stream this live on Twitch, we've got Matt Tyler playing Oprah in the live stream right now. I think he just hit 50 subs. Is that what Matt Tyler gifted a tier one sub to Root Night 5. They've given 50 gift subs in this channel. I'm still working out all of the perks and stuff on how this Twitch is supposed to work, but Matt's just blowing us away right now. So thank you so much, buddy. I can't thank you enough for all the support. And then those of you that have been contributing to the channel and to the Twitch and to the YouTube, it's greatly appreciated. We've got a great live chat cranking up already. We've got Root Night 5, JT Moat, Pacostin. I see Dave Burns, Heike, Q3 Becker. Gary the Fireman, Aditya Anil, Tech Homie, apparently this is his Tech Homie's first time joining the stream. Vazicos Blazer 891, or Blazer, is it like anyway, ER1980. And I'm seeing some more, even Cameron Burrell over on the Periscopes. All right, folks, we've got tons to jump into, but I want to start off over the weekend. If you happen to be of the United States persuasion, I hope you had a happy and safe 4th of July weekend. It's always my hope on these special days or days of remembrance or a holiday of some sort that you are safe, that you were well-fed, that you're healthy, and that you got to spend some time either safely in person with some good social distance or, you know, maybe digitally through some kind of video streaming platform. You got to spend some time with people who care about you. So we're in an interesting historical era right now. There's a lot of uncertainty. There's a lot of turmoil. And, for us, for my family, the 4th of July was, I tried to take off as much as I could. I was not editing all weekend. Like I'm usually editing videos all weekend. Spent some good time with family. We ate a lot of burgers. Just became like the food of the weekend. And then I also got to spend some time with a cousin. So it was really sweet. And for those of you out there who aren't of the American persuasion, I just hope you had yourselves a fantastic weekend. You know, we could all do with some good time off, some good downtime, some good recharge time. Maybe you caught up on some awesome live streams and podcasts. Like maybe you caught TK's live stream Saturday morning in A Side of Tech. Maybe you caught Across the Podcast. Maybe you caught the Brosifs. Maybe you tuned into any of the insane live streaming experiments like Vipers, trying to break StreamYard's 12-person tech live chat. It was good times. I caught up with a lot of digital friends, so I was really happy to kind of dance around the internet. TED Talks Tech, Saeed Ted on Twitter, had a great live stream on Friday. Again, there was a lot going on. So, why don't we jump in? Let's kick that off. Happy belated 4th of July. Hopefully you didn't set your neighborhood on fire with illegal fireworks. All right. We've got a really heavy gadget block today. Lots of rumors and stuff that we should chew through. Apple and charging bricks, Pixel shenanigans, Samsung leaking the images of the Note 20. And then I want to spend a little time trying to unravel what's going on with Nord, with the OnePlus. So we should kick out some housekeeping and get through all the news, because I really want to try and spend a bit more time on the geekier stuff this week than all the political stuff. Last week was such a heavy show. Like I was editing it and going back, and even in the show, I'm kind of like, oh yeah, sorry guys, it turned out to be a heavier show than I was expecting. Man, giving it that second listen, there were a lot of dark stories, so let's not hang out too much on that side. Agreed? Or and if anyone in the live chat disagrees and thinks that we should spend more time on like really heavy, dark political stories, just let me know. We could make that happen. You guys know I'll soapbox for as long as you want me to soapbox. So, Dave Burns, last week was hashtag some bummer guy podcast. All right, we're going to knock out housekeeping. What's the over under? Gary Fireman is saying 11 minutes. Matt Tyler saying 8. Two Spirits. Darth Vader says yes. Yes. You know what? I'm just going to do a quick run. Housekeeping. I'm going to see if I can even beat Matt Tyler. What are we? 9:06 Pacific Daylight Time and screen share. A number one. LG Velvet versus OnePlus 8, the fight for, quote, affordable 5G. I really enjoyed putting this video together because, surprisingly, one of my favorite showdowns so far this year has been OnePlus versus LG. So you've got the 8, the 8 Pro, and then I did a pair of videos comparing the OnePluses against the LG V60. And now the Velvet is offering something a little different in that same tier. It's kind of part 3 of the showdown. LG versus OP, who knew it would be so much fun? Because it's very different solutions for the same tiers the same pricing tiers. After that, a video that's kind of taken a while for me to chew up, the TCL 10 Pro review, feature packed at a low price. I've been very impressed with TCL's first self-branded smartphone, the TCL 10 Pro. It's been on sale for under $400, and I think this is an excellent competitor in that kind of Pixel 3a versus iPhone SE space. It's always funny to me where phones like that get a lot of hate online because it doesn't have some amazing top-of-the-line chipset. And then you look at all of the other features that it does have, like a headphone jack and multiple camera array and an IR blaster to use it as a universal remote and a pretty good screen and a huge battery and amazing battery life. And people are like, but it doesn't have a Snapdragon 865. So those people are useless. Moving right along, we've got Creator Chat coming back with Isa Rodriguez from Isa Does Tech. I have to immediately apologize for the flair that I just put on Isa's name. I'm finding it really difficult to even manage my terrible New Mexican accent with these Invisalign trays in. So like rolling my R's is like forcefully difficult, but I digress. Isa Does Tech is an absolutely wonderful YouTube channel, and she was very candid, sort of sharing her thoughts on trying to approach tech conversation from a more style and fashion perspective and how that's not always gone over well with certain members of the tech community, which is a shame because her content is phenomenal. And wrapping us up, oh, not wrapping us up, second to last, while I also got that TCL 10 Pro review out, I got another major review out, the OnePlus 8 Pro, 2 months with a true flagship. Again, the more I spend time with these phones, spending time to really use a OnePlus 8 Pro, the less I'm impressed with sort of embargo week reviews, air quotes, bunny rabbit ears reviews. There is so much to like about this phone if you're shopping premium tier, competing so wonderfully well against iPhone 11 Pros and Galaxy S20 Pluses, the OnePlus 8 Pro properly belongs in that segment. So few compromises, amazing tech for the price, and to overlook the benefits of the phone, I think is, I've seen a number of reviews that do a disservice to what the OnePlus 8 Pro actually represents, because people want to pretend that OnePluses should always be bargain basement, super cheap devices. And that's never really been true. And lastly, wrapping us up for housekeeping, it was a really fun video to co-produce over at Newegg. What should you put in your gaming PC summer 2020 edition? This was a pitch I actually threw out at the very beginning of Newegg Now when I started doing that show with Trisha Hershberger. And it's more semi-regular and more seasonal PC building guides. There were a ton of videos on the Newegg YouTube channel, like how to build a PC, and they were all really old. And so what I wanted us to start doing was like, hey, first half of 2018, this is a parts list. And these are some of the phrases and terms that are really, really current. And now I think we're in a place where we can actually execute that pretty well. So this is the summer 2020 edition. I really want to come back for a fall, for a winter, for next spring, and put together like shorter, quicker, punchier. In the world of PC building, you've probably been hearing about Intel versus Ryzen. In 2022, here's how to customize your own ARM-based PC. Really modularly put these videos together so they become a bit more of a series and less these massively monolithic PC build videos. So this is the first attempt at that, and I hope you guys will enjoy it, check it out, especially those of you who are PC building enthusiasts. If you're really into building your own PC, I don't think any of this information is gonna school you, but we want to be a bit more of a resource rather than just like, here's pretty b-roll of motherboards all the time. Like, we could put some other videos together in there that I think will help people out. All right. So that does this for housekeeping. 5 minutes. We did housekeeping in 5 minutes. Flipping love it. Was it 5 minutes? Yeah, it was 5 minutes. All right. Let's get this out of the way here. some fun conversations already in here. Simon says Hypno is apologizing for his late arrival. You missed all of housekeeping, Simon says Hypno. Usually that's a 20-minute affair. So we do have some tech politics, some news to cover, but these are more stories that I think, like I've been saying for the last couple weeks, We just want to keep some of this stuff on our radar. We just want to check in with how some of these stories are evolving. And we want to make sure that these trends don't just get lost in social media noise. So, sorry, I just got this comment from Boing Byte. I watch YouTubers that ramble for 40 to 60 minutes on motherboard VRM quality. Then I don't know that we can help you so much in our Newegg videos, but you might enjoy it as just sort of casual conversational background noise. All right. Yes. Tech and politics. We've got the Earn It Act. We've got Facebook. We've got loot boxes. Let's move through these. Tech Lovin' Mama. Everyone say hey to Tech Lovin' Mama. I had kind of a semi-serious conversation with Issa and with Shannon and with Tech Lovin' Mama over the weekend. Again, our ability to represent different voices in this community is growing and it's getting stronger, but we still have some work to do to kind of improve how we bring people into the tech commentary fold. So on that note, let's start with broadband infrastructure. Remember a couple weeks back, we were talking about how the FCC was basically just going to authorize billions of dollars to ISPs with like no oversight. And, oh yeah, it's the only way that we can improve rural broadband, but we're not going to hold them to any standards. We're just going to dump a ton of money into the coffers of these mega corporations and ISPs and telecoms. Well, it looks like we're even ramping that up a little bit further. There was a major House funding bill. Let me go into screen share here. This one's coming by way of Engadget. It's focusing just on broadband, written up by Ann Smajstrala. I have no idea how to pronounce your last name, and so apologies there. And again, all of these stories, all of the articles that we're going to be talking about, all of the rumors and all of the housekeeping, the show notes will be available on somegadgetguide.com if you want all the links to what we're talking about. Okay, House approves $100 billion in broadband funding for rural areas. From the article, the U.S. House of Representatives approved the Moving Forward Act this week, a $1.5 trillion with a T infrastructure bill that puts $100 billion toward bringing high-speed broadband to underserved areas. The ambitious bill also allocates funds toward transportation and clean energy initiatives like $500 billion for rebuilding highways, bridges, and rail, and $70 billion for promoting renewable energy. So I haven't had the opportunity yet to read through the particulars of the bill, but especially for the broadband side of this, even though this is a House initiative, it's being kind of pushed forward. I mean, obviously, all of these votes are going down on party lines. So Democrats are moving the Moving Forward Act forward. I'm increasingly concerned that when we dump $100 billion into broadband infrastructure, that we probably won't get a great return on our investment. It seems to me that this historical cycle, especially in light of very lax regulations, has been let's keep giving telecoms sweetheart deals, tax breaks, let them charge fees for consumers, and then we'll just literally give them tax dollars. And then we never really get the improvements that we actually need. At some point, we really do need fiber to home. It doesn't matter how good your wireless gets. We're spending so much money shooting satellites into space for satellite internet, which is never going to be as competitive against a cable what runs to your home that directly connects you to a massive server. If this $100 billion has stipulations on it, has goals, has benchmarks, has criteria for achievements, then I'm going to feel pretty good. Something tells me our current elected leadership probably not that savvy. Oh, we just keep throwing money at the problem. It's going to get better. I'm sure it will. From The Last One Woke, I read an article today with a how got together to not only build but fund their own internet. I don't know who got together as the telecom and the FCC did not assist. We've also had a lot of issues with community-funded efforts, often because laws will prevent competition. So you say, hey, our township wants to build broadband, and then Verizon can come in and say, no, we've got a charter, we've got licensing, we've got this, we've got that, so we'll sue your town into oblivion, and Verizon has more money for lawyers than your little town, so you can't. Oh no, Matt Tyler. So Matt Tyler first to mention Kanye running for president? We're not going to be talking about that on this podcast. Dave Burns, we could just put fiber in the ground. Again, it seems to me like we're trying really hard to put satellites in space when digging a hole in the ground is probably better for most people. All right. We want to cover this real quick. Facebook is still facing an advertiser exodus. I don't feel bad for Facebook. I feel their platform has neglected their responsibilities for being such a major force on the internet and for kind of ruining my relationships with various family members of differing political ideologies. Excuse me. So, if we ever needed more evidence that Facebook struggles and mostly fails to live up to their obligations as being a data broker, let's look at this article from Mashable. Facebook admits to improperly giving user data to third-party developers again. This is written up by Jack Morse. Stop me if you've heard this one. Facebook gave user data to third-party developers even after specifically telling users it wouldn't do that. Oh no. Facebook pulled a whoopsies again. Again, like the whole business model of Facebook is to leak. This isn't, if anyone's surprised by this, please let me know in the comments why I should have had expectations that Facebook could live up to any kinds of data security policies. But this is from the actual Facebook blog. I've got this section sort of highlighted here. So, improving data limits for infrequently used apps. In 2014, 6 years ago. Sorry, the laughing and saying 6 years ago for emphasis is not a part of the blog post. Let me get back to the blog post. In 2014, we introduced more granular controls for people to decide which non-public information, such as their email address or their birth date, to share when they used Facebook to sign into apps. Later in 2018, we announced that we would automatically expire an app's ability to receive any updates to this information if our systems didn't recognize a person as having used the app within the last 90 days. But recently, we discovered that in some instances, apps continued to receive the data that people had previously authorized, even if it appeared they hadn't used the app in the last 90 days. For example, this could happen if someone used a fitness app to invite their friends from their hometown to a workout, but we didn't recognize that some of their friends had been inactive for many months. What a charming and folksy colloquial example of how this might have gone down in the most benign way. That's not from the blog post. That was my editorializing. One more paragraph from this. From the last several months of data we have available, we currently estimate that this issue enabled approximately 5,000 developers to continue receiving information, for example, language or gender, beyond 90 days of inactivity as recognized by our systems. We haven't seen evidence that this issue resulted in sharing information that was inconsistent with the permissions people gave when they logged in using Facebook. Now, I love this last sentence. We haven't seen evidence that this issue resulted in sharing information that was inconsistent with the permissions people gave when they logged in using Facebook, but they were currently giving 5,000 developers information that they said to the users of Facebook that they wouldn't have access to. So that one paragraph is an immediate contradiction. Your terms of service, your data security, privacy policies, something that you have touted as a benefit of your platform for 6 years. Whoops, oopsies, our bad. We looked back for like 3 whole weeks and we didn't find any violations of the thing that we are now telling you has been consistently violated for 6 years. Dave Burns, have you been looking for evidence? We have investigated ourselves and we have discovered that we have done nothing wrong. We can always change our terms of service, sort of like in the Ministry of Truth, to validate our business practices and make sure that we weren't breaking our own rules, because our rules are fluid, but your rules aren't. Kyle Ruggles, and the data is already out there, so there's no taking that back. I mean, like, increasingly, I'm putting this out there in earnest because I'm laughing, and I'm laughing to kind of keep from just sobbing at our current state of consumer protections and regulatory agencies. I've been wrestling with this idea really hard. We talked last week about Microsoft shutting down Mixer, and that they were just going to turn the Mixer fire hose over to Facebook Gaming. That really bothers me. There's a reason why I host this podcast on Twitch and not on YouTube. I'm trying to find appropriate platforms for the kinds of conversations that I want to have. If it's a really sort of well-edited tech review, I'm okay. I'm still okay putting those on YouTube. I don't feel like I have to completely gut the whole system to try and like self-host video or something like that. But increasingly, Facebook is becoming more and more problematic. I'm surprised it took us this long and a global situation for advertisers to realize they're not really getting their money's worth on Facebook. If you operate on Facebook, it's basically extortion. The Some Gadget Guy page on Facebook, I don't know how many. I honestly have not logged into my Facebook account since the end of last year. The only time I did was to get a message from Stephanie Farmer, my old friend from college, who's running that STEM Kids workshop, which hopefully you'll check out from the show notes last week or 2 weeks ago. I can't remember because everything's a blur now. That's the only time I've properly actively gone to the facebook.com and gone into my messages. So if you're sending me stuff to Facebook, it's basically just going into a trash can. Because of my own personal lack of use and my philosophical issues with the platform, I'm seriously considering just pulling the plug entirely. Wiping out the Some Gadget Guy Facebook page, wiping out my own personal Facebook account. I don't derive any benefit from it. I'd probably still coast on Instagram. Like, I'm not really using Instagram like I used to since they screwed up the order. I want chronological and they won't give it to me. I'm not sure. If anyone has any thoughts on that, because I kind of feel like in this live chat, a lot of you are going to say, just do it, burn it to the ground. Like, hey, Key, just literally while I said that, do it, exclamation point, exclamation point. Sorry, Sentinel909 just posted something really snarky and I had to kind of giggle at it. But yeah, because of what Dave Burns is talking about, you have to pay to reach your followers on Facebook. So let's say I have 200 followers on the Some Gadget Guy Facebook page. When I post, auto post to Facebook, so my blog updates a post that automatically gets sent to Facebook, and I never babysit that. It just goes. It just shows up on that Facebook page. Those 200 followers aren't notified. They don't get that content. Maybe 5% of them will. And then Facebook will say, oh, if you want to reach the rest of the people who subscribed to your page, you got to pay us. And that to me is scummy. Like, that's like online mafia style strong arming, you know? So news agencies are starting to pull their content from Facebook. Advertisers are pulling their ad dollars from Facebook. I'm seriously considering walking away from Facebook. Kyle Ruggles, the one thing Facebook has going for it is events. How are we supposed to invite all of our friends to events? Go back to Evites. I'm kind of fine just sending calendar posts at this point. The cool thing about like Zoom and digital online meetings, so much of my online interactions now have just gone through, hey, let me send you a calendar invite. And then it shows up in my calendar and I'm good. So I'm not saying it's easy. I'm not saying that anyone could just pull the plug and walk away. I'm saying I'm in a position where I'm not using it. And none of those benefits, none of those features help me at all. The Facebook event planning, I haven't seen a Facebook event since 2019.
Hey folks, are you getting bored of the current collection of tech and geek commentary on the internet? Is the discussion of new electronics feeling a bit stale? Do you want to find some fresh voices to add to your subscription queue? Check out the community on r glowing rectangles on Reddit. Now, this subreddit was built to help new voices in the tech community find more audience, and we need your support. Sharing, commenting, and those precious, tasty upvotes. Reddit can radically help a content creator expand their reach. Do you know a producer who deserves more attention? Do you just want to find fun new stuff? Head on over to reddit.com/r/glowingrectangles and share or browse to your heart's content. Once again, reddit.com/r/glowingrectangles, and let's build something cool together.
So I'm kind of fine just going. let me get this out of the way here. All right. We're a couple stories away. We're gonna knock out news proper fast. I'm excited. We're on it. I'm feeling good. Feeling like we're doing this. Another story that we've been following up on a lot. I did a video on it recently. The Apple App Store was recently sued for including apps on the platform that have gambling style mechanics. I was very much in favor of this lawsuit, and I'm hoping that Google and Amazon are targeted next from some kind of class action style lawsuit. I feel like this fake debate as to what goes on in random number generated player progression, microtransactions, and digital online currencies has kind of festered long enough. I really feel it's time to start hitting companies where they make money on these types of business practices. So, in the UK, hold on, let me get this over here. This is a story from BBC News. Why is this not working? Ah, there it goes. Okay. Sorry, I'm fixing this live. Loot boxes. Lords call for immediate gambling regulation. I don't know that BBC carries bylines, so I don't know who wrote up this article. The House of Lords, let me get that there. The House of Lords Gambling Committee says video game loot boxes should be regulated under gambling laws. The Lords say they should be classified as games of chance, which would bring them under the Gambling Act of 2005. Quote, if a product looks like gambling and feels like gambling, it should be regulated as gambling. And they warn that such a change should not wait. Quote, the government must act immediately to bring loot boxes within the remit of gambling legislation and regulation. And I'm all for this. This is going to be difficult. Because I think we've already noticed a significant shift in company strategies. So it used to be a loot box was a very obvious one-to-one transaction. You pay money and then you open this digital box and random things pop out of it. Awful. Now, what we're seeing is a move towards super grind and digital currency to influence random events. I'm going to keep pointing to a game that broke my heart. Marvel Future Fight was a game I was super into until the end game got ridiculously RNG heavy. So it used to be you would get these in-game materials and then you would upgrade your Captain America or upgrade your Iron Man. And it was sort of set.
oh, you want to take Iron Man from level one to level two, you need 20 Iron Man points. These little things called biometrics. You don't need to know all the in-game lingo. Once you got into the end game, though, after years of them ratcheting up all of the online purchases, you would have to get six or seven different types of in-game materials, and then all of those would go into a random number generator. So you might push upgrade once, and it fully upgrades your Iron Man to tier three, and now you've got this amazingly powerful Iron Man. Or you might push upgrade and it's going to deplete all of those resources, but you only got 3% of the way there. Why don't you dump all of that material in again and try for a second time? And you do. And then you got, oh, you got 20%. Didn't that feel good? Why don't you try another spin? Oh, you only got 3% again. Your Iron Man's 26% of the way to getting his tier three upgrade. So that's frustrating enough. There are over 200 characters in that game, each one requiring an inordinate amount of time to grind all of the materials to do that upgrade dance. And you can also throw real world money at like jewel and gem packs. So there's a premium in-game crystal currency. I think the top purchase is $100. That $100 purchase will not upgrade one character. Times 200 characters in the game. And the end game is horrific. So this is a family-friendly franchise targeted at kids. There's, you know, this is like, I think it's rated T for teen. Where you can drop thousands of dollars and barely make a dent in the end game for Marvel Future Fight. And all of it is now built on this. Well, you can grind and grind and grind. You can totally play the game for free, but you would have to grind for months. You could throw all of that effort into this random number generator and still not get your Iron Man upgraded. Times 200 characters. So I did a video and I talked about, I feel like the only way forward, because I'm on the surface of it, I actually don't have a problem with gacha mechanics. If you want to have gambling in a game, however that gambling manifests, go do it. But it needs to immediately be adults only. Marvel Future Fight needs to be an adults only game. Adults can go and throw thousands at these characters. Go do it. Go have a blast. Go pay for the best squad of Marvel characters to go and fight your endgame battles. I'm not going to join you, but please feel free. I think you'll have a blast if you have the thousands to spend. But my problem is we regulate gambling, slot machines, poker tables, Vegas for kids. You shouldn't be able to have that kind of a mechanic in a game that's on a family-friendly franchise. So shame on Netmarble, shame on Disney for allowing this, and also shame on Apple and Google for taking 30% of every single one of those microtransactions. If the video game industry is not going to police themselves and appropriately rate games, not just for story content, but also for game content, what's going to happen? Politicians are going to get involved. And if I know anyone here in the live chat, we don't really want politicians involved. It's going to get way messy when they get to weigh in on what types of game mechanics and storyline issues video games can tackle. The game developers, publishers, and resellers need to start reining this in, or it's going to get real bad. Two Spirits 411, where are these kids getting the money from? In Marvel Future Fight, the whales are adults. I mean, like, all of the people that I would really compete with were probably, I don't know, maybe 5 years younger to 20 years older. When you were really a part of a clan
and you were doing these online clan versus clan showdowns and battles, and you'd try and take a map, and you'd have your crew of Marvel characters, and you were communicating like, hey, I really need Thanos over in Sector 4. Does anyone have a Thor that they can drop in Sector 2? I don't think anyone was younger than me. And I was probably spending about $5 a month on their little like subscription gem pack packages, which at the beginning of the game was totally reasonable. But then towards the last couple of years I was playing, the last year I was playing, it was like that $5 a month got you nothing. And then you'd look at the leaderboards and it was all like South Korean crews that each individual player had spent tens of thousands of dollars to invest in that crew so that they could compete at the top of the leaderboards. It was intense. Not great. from the last one woke, I thinking that Google and Apple are getting into a lose-lose situation. They're already getting hit as far as regulating what apps are on their platform. This is just pouring more fuel to the fire. I'd rather the government just regulate how games are just classified versus this being up to Google or Apple. It shouldn't be up to the government, and it shouldn't be up to Google or Apple. My big complaint is with the ESRB. That's the organization like the MPAA that rates video games. I'm not saying it'd be perfect, and obviously kids would still play AO games, but we would at least have some honesty in the discussion if Marvel Future Fight had an adults-only rating for the game mechanics. Google and Apple would still probably have it on their platforms, but then it would fall into the restrictions where if you have a kid's account, they wouldn't just be able to run with mommy and daddy's credit card and start dumping cash on these gambling mechanics that light up the human brain and start dropping dopamine whenever you have a successful pull at the slot machine. That's what I want. I don't want Google really telling us what we can and can't play. I don't want the government really telling us what we can and can't play, but we need to have proper disclosure on how our games work. DTNL, tens of thousands of dollars. This is plain ridiculous. Like console exclusive games cost a fraction of that and have cheaper multiplayer options with better graphics. Yeah. I can't disagree there. Matt Tyler, this is only brought up once a year. Politicians say, yes, we will look to keep the people happy. Then a year later, they say, oh, yeah, we will look into that then over and over. The UK government are just keeping face, not actually doing anything. It makes the news, makes them look good, and then we move on. I kind of feel like we've seen some baby steps. I'm not disagreeing with you, Matt. I'm just saying I kind of feel like we're seeing some baby steps. It's just worrying that we're talking about loot boxes in a way that doesn't really exist anymore. So again, our politicians are behind the curve. I don't really care if it's a loot box or a crypt crate or whatever it is that we're going to call it. What I care about is random number generating player progression. If there is a random event that is designed to light up the brain like a slot machine, we should immediately make that an adults only game mechanic. I worry, I mean, kind of with you, I kind of worry that our politicians go, oh, well, this villain video game got rid of loot boxes. But then everything else is, you know, funneling money into character upgrades that are based on random numbers. And it's going to be super gross. Simon says, Hypno, my stepson was spending a fortune on EA games and DLC. And I feel like we can also point to EA as being one of the leading causes of this absolutely terrible video gaming trend. Speaking of video gaming, this is another story on mobile gaming. Written up by Bloomberg. I just want to screen share this real quick. From Mark Gurman and Jason Schreier over at Bloomberg, Apple cancels some arcade games and strategy shift to keep subscribers. Apple Incorporated has shifted the strategy of its Apple Arcade gaming service, canceling contracts for some games in development while seeking other titles that it believes it will better retain subscribers.
The Cupertino, California-based tech giant scrapped development contracts with multiple game studios earlier this year and informed them of the new approach, according to people familiar with the matter. On calls in mid-April, an Apple Arcade creative producer told some developers that their upcoming games didn't have the level of, quote, engagement Apple is seeking. Apple is increasingly interested in titles that will keep users hooked, so subscribers stay beyond the free trial of the service, according to the people. They ask not to be identified discussing private conversations. Please don't say who we are, because then Apple won't let us sell games on their platform, and we, it will hurt. So, this is kind of a scummy move. Apple Arcade was kind of billed, was sort of promised as this one service. And I'm sure they're looking at numbers. You know, Apple is really good at making sure they can hash out the absolute best profit margins on any service or any product that they can. But if we remember that promise of like no in-app purchases and no pay-to-win mechanics, you know, Apple Arcade actually set a really high bar for quality of content at $5 a month and kind of circumventing a lot of the more traditional monetization routes that give mobile gaming a bad name. Well, now it seems that Apple doesn't want to invest in narrative, single campaign, storyline driven games. I'm not sure it's actually mentioned in this article. It was brought up in another one. I can't remember the name of the game now. But Apple is using, you know, sort of action puzzle games as the benchmark for what's an engaging title. So, you know, like kind of like Candy Crush style gaming. Maybe there's like an action component, but really it's just the most mindless move the fruit around till the fruit disappears and then pretty lights explode on the screen styles of gaming. And that's what they're pivoting towards. The future of Apple gaming isn't going to be Sky Children of the Light. It's not going to be battle chasers. It's not going to be twin stick shooters like Tesla versus Lovecraft. It's not going to be anything that has sort of a singular story that you would play through once and then maybe revisit. It's not going to be an action ARPG like Anima. It's not going to be tower defense games unless they're really cutesy, vibrant, simple puzzler kinds of tower defense games. You're not going to see an Anomaly or a Sentinel or anything like that on those games either. What is the highest degree of lowest effort replayability? And that's what Apple Arcade is trying to foster. So I feel like if I were a subscriber, that to me, I would have pulled the plug on that. They are actively courting a style of gaming that makes mobile gaming worse. There are only so many gem swap, fruit swap games that can be out there. I'm not... Candy Crush. Like, I have zero interest in more Candy Crushes being on a platform. And yet here are amazing console ports, Stardew Valleys, the Rockstar games, the Oddworld series, incredible titles that have gone to find second homes on mobile. But that's not what Apple's really interested in trying to promote. They don't want to pay developers part of the subscription monies that go into Apple Arcade for titles that only seem to have that singular experience, and they're trying to encourage developers to basically make more garbage. I'm not impressed. I mean, Kyle Ruggles is saying Tetris. EA has the license for mobile Tetris. You don't want Tetris from EA. If you're going to play Tetris, let's see. I would recommend, well, Tetris Effect. Tetris Effect is amazing. And if you can play Tetris Effect in VR, it's stunning. I already can zone out to Tetris for an inordinately long period of time. You lose all sense of time and space when you play Tetris in VR. I also really like Puyo Puyo Tetris. I'm terrible at Puyo Puyo, but I'm really good at Tetris. And then if you're on a Switch,
and you're not playing Tetris 99, then you're totally missing out. So those would be my picks. Don't go with like EA Tetris on an iPad. It's not good. So Q3 Becker, but Juan, you're just out of touch with the current market. Here's the thing that bothers me about Apple's strategy here. It's the same thing that bothers me with Google, or what bothers me with some of the discussion on gadgets in general. It's totally a conversation of what's already here. It's a conversation of the possible today. When you look at how insanely powerful phones and tablets are, there's no reason why we shouldn't be pushing more console-grade gaming experiences. It is so easy. Hold on, do I have it on my desk? It is so easy to connect a SteelSeries. This is a, I think I got this on sale for $35 over Christmas. And I have an adapter for it, so you can clip a phone directly to it. A great dual analog Bluetooth game controller that also has a dedicated PC dongle, so you can have near zero lag, direct connection wireless. This is a great controller. You can hook this up to any number of games that actually play really well. But the problem is not all games support controllers on Android. So it's kind of a pain. But same thing. It's why I've enjoyed playing with the dual screen LGs and mapping controls to a second screen and having sort of a poor man's more expensive Nintendo DS. I like that. Poor man's more expensive. These experiences can improve, but it takes some positioning, some marketing, and some savvy to sort of get the word out to people who want to play more in-depth gaming, have more in-depth gaming experiences. Again, like if you're not playing Sky Children of the Light and you enjoy that sort of fantasy exploration style of gaming, you're missing out. Sky is a gorgeous game. You can take it to an older title like Bright Ridge and Vangels. Bright Ridge is coded by one dude, and it's not the most in-depth game mechanic, but it's a beautiful, calm, chill, let's walk around a forest and visit these temples and structures, and I'm going to follow this like spirit orb, and it's wonderful. It's a wonderful sit-down vibe kind of experience. You pick up a VR title like Thumper. Battle Chasers is a great JRPG. I mean, there's so much. But again, we're going to let Apple kind of dictate what the mindset is of mobile gaming. Most people think, well, mobile gaming is crap Candy Crush style titles. Better give them more of that, as opposed to actually standing up for Apple Arcade, paying developers, and encouraging a library of titles that could better compete against consoles. And it shouldn't be that way. what do we got? We got one more story here. We don't have to spend a lot of time on this, and we can get into the subreddit plug. Last week, I brought up the Earn It Act. I humbly requested people write their elected officials, their Senate representatives, the representatives in the Senate, and we've seen some needle move on what Earn It is actually going to accomplish. Earn It is the act that was attempting to punish platforms that were protected by Section 230 of the Communications Decency Act, that was going to set up a commission that would have a best practices for social media on the internet. And if you didn't follow those best practices, then you were heavily scrutinized, regulated, and you were not afforded certain protections like encrypted data traffic. So Earn It passed, but it passed heavily amended. Our Senate managed to poke some holes in Section 230 of the Communications Decency Act, but it's not as dire as what the original language of the bill was going to include. This was written up by Timothy Carr over at Common Dreams. On Thursday, the Senate Judiciary Committee passed an amended Earn It Act, paving the way for floor debate in the full Senate. Though the bill has changed substantially since its early drafts, free press action continues to raise serious concerns about the legislation.
The original bill would have charged a new congressionally appointed commission with the Department of Justice, the DOJ, to develop, quote, best practices that websites, applications, broadband providers, and other online entities could follow to avoid liability for what the bill describes as online child abuse material. I'm having to kind of self-censor a little because YouTube likes to go after certain words. I probably just demonetized by saying this word right here. The bill as amended today has removed any legal authority from the DOJ commission, abandoning the premise of earning Section 230 protections by following the commission's recommended practices. The amended bill has lessened but not eliminated the threats to free speech and encryption tools by both abandoning the public attempt to give the commission's decisions the force of law by adopting an amendment from Senator Patrick Leahy, a Democrat out of Vermont, to ensure that deploying cybersecurity tools like encryption does not give rise to additional liability for companies. This amendment got passed through. Earn It is weaker. It's still going to go for a Senate vote. I would still humbly request that you write an elected official, that you write a senator, and you also probably send a quick message out to your local congressional member in the House of Representatives. The thing that bothers me is if they can't get it all in one shot, they'll piecemeal it. Okay, well, we can't get this committee that's going to come up with our best practices and empower this committee through the Department of Justice, which can directly impact, you know, online services. So why don't we just start with the committee? And then in a couple years, once this calms down a little, then we'll link it with the DOJ. And then we'll give, after a couple of years, we'll give the DOJ some additional oversight or authority over, you know, online services and social media. This is a really easy thing to lobster pot. Turn up the heat just a little bit. We can't set the water to boil immediately. We'll just kind of turn it up a little here, and then we'll kind of turn it up. What's that behind you? And then I'll turn it up a little higher. That's what I'm concerned about. I feel whether you're liberal or conservative, the original bill was co-sponsored by a Democrat and a Republican. This is bad precedent. We need some type of regulatory adjustment for how social media and major data companies do business on the internet. It's not going to come from this style commission. This won't work. It's going to weaken privacy. It's going to weaken security. It's going to crumble major parts of how we do business online if these companies can't abide by these best practices. And as soon as you build holes into a security system, bad actors are going to exploit those holes. Whether or not you even trust our government, as soon as you weaken encryption, it's game over. As soon as that's a liability for a company to employ encrypted data communications, you're screwed. And it's also kind of the foundation of how we do online commerce and banking. You can't untangle sales and ads and purchasing through social media and keep finances separate and safe. Facebook can't even do it on their own platform internally. There's no way a government commission is going to employ this well in this current state for the Earn It Act. Section 230 of the Communications Decency Act needs some reform. That I feel like that's totally fair in this modern age of megacorp, big data, Facebook, Amazon, Google, Apple, Microsoft, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Not like this, though. If you want to get engaged, if you want to get involved, if you have something to say about this, social media is basically screaming into the void. That's not going to influence our elected officials. Write an email, make a phone call, write a letter and mail it with a stamp. The time that you would have spent on Facebook or Twitter, put that towards a brief email detailing your feelings on this type of legislation, and then just send it directly to the elected official that you vote for when you go to vote. And that's going to be so much more effective if that messaging is hitting directly, Because right now they're only listening to lobbyists and to other government commissions. They're not listening to us because we're not really talking about it. We're talking about it on venues that they don't really participate on as much as they like to pretend they do. But hand in hand, you know, this is why we need net neutrality. Because if the internet is an information service, then they would probably, the entire internet, telecommunications industry, ISPs, if the internet is regulated at the same as a service on the internet, then that would also fall prey to this style commission. You know, it wouldn't matter if you're talking about Comcast, Verizon, Google Fiber, or if you're talking about Facebook, Google Search, or Twitter. They are technically the same as per how our FCC has classified the internet. The internet should not be regulated like a service on the internet, which is a really confusing way to kind of get my point across. So, Dave Burns, hashtag some bummer guy podcast returns. Hey man, suck it up. I'm at 9:57.
Just a quick interjection here, folks. I love highlighting good work and talented people, producers and writers who deserve more attention. So here's a quick word from someone making cool stuff on the internet, and I hope you check out what they have to offer.
Hello, my name is Martin, and I run the Tech Altar YouTube channel. I talk about tech, obviously, but instead of focusing purely on the devices themselves, I mostly analyze the companies, their business and marketing strategies, as well as the industry trends that shape the gadgets we all love. I studied business, I worked for a couple of tech companies like Oppo in China, for example, and I'm building my own tech startup on the side right now, so I really like talking about these topics. And if you enjoy zooming out and trying to see the bigger picture as well, you can find me by searching for Tech Altar, that's A-L-T-A-R, on YouTube, and you can also come say hi to me on Twitter as well. Thanks, Juan.
I'm not going to let this go. Earn It is bad policy, masquerading as how to protect kids. So I hope that you will engage, participate, and hopefully make your feelings known on why this is bad policy. So why don't we... Matt Tyler, that stretch made for good audio. Man, I kind of like... I can't get the other side. Like my neck is popping asymmetrically. So why don't we take a quick break here and talk about the subreddit, because exciting things have been going on the subreddit. Every podcast has a place on reddit.com, which can act as some sort of community. Sometimes it's a place to tell the hosts how awesome they are. If you want to go on my subreddit and tell me how awesome I am, I'm not going to be upset by that. Sometimes it's about linking news stories. My subreddit is continuing to try and foster a place where we can promote content that deserves more attention. You can go to a major subreddit and you're going to see the top news sites and the top YouTubers. They don't need help circularly self-promoting their content on a major subreddit. But if you're trying to break into tech reviewing, commentary, anything that we're sort of fans of, and you try to post your content to one of those major subreddits, you're going to get slammed. Oh, no self-promotion, or you're not popular enough, so we won't let you build and be more popular. And this is increasingly true of popularity algorithms on Facebook and on YouTube. So one way that I'm trying to help is by offering a platform where the rules are content that deserves more attention. It could be content from a major YouTuber. I don't really feel like, nothing against him personally, because I'm a fan of his work, but like Mr. Mobile doesn't need help getting shared. But if I subscribe to someone on YouTube with 1,000 subscribers, YouTube will immediately try and convince me to subscribe to channels with much larger subscriber counts. So it could be someone who's really well established, or maybe it's a video that just didn't get the traction that you felt it deserved. reddit.com/r/glowingrectangles. One more time. reddit.com/r/glowingrectangles. This is my attempt at trying to offer a platform so not only can a viewer go and find a new content creator, but that we can share up-and-coming YouTubers, established YouTubers, and article writers, editorialists, bloggers, whatever. Video has been the main share, but if you follow someone who's writing their own blog and you feel they deserve more attention, that's a resource I hope you'll use, and I hope you'll subscribe to it. So these are the top stories on reddit.com/r/glowingrectangles of the last week, and it was a pretty crazy week. With a bullet, I mean, far and away, the top story came from user agent 46472. This is a post called Disconnect. So this isn't an article. It's not a video. This individual wrote up a post and just shared it directly on Glowing Rectangles and just talking about the, quote, massive disconnect between the most vocal of the tech community and those buying smartphones. Selling phones as a job for the past half year, I've noticed that all of the, quote, important must-haves, end quote, for smartphones basically do not matter for the vast majority of the customers I've worked with. This is the highest upvoted post, the highest upvoted submission, and also I think currently is holding the record for the most number of comments. I'm just going to click into this for people weighing in the comments, sharing their thoughts on the disconnect between average real consumers and tech enthusiasts and tech reviewers. It's a great read. It's a great write-up. It's a topic I feel we can all sort of passionately share, and lots of people added some thoughts. So it's a great discussion. This is exactly the kind of thoughtful commentary I would hope to encourage more of. This is a person who doesn't have their own YouTube channel. This is a person who doesn't have their own blog. They're not writing for another outlet or for another publication. And they shared some practical on-the-ground thoughts with this community, and the community jumped right to it. Number two spot on Glowing Rectangles, DIY Atomic Purple Switch Lite step-by-step tutorial from Erica Griffin. She's a tech nerd who likes to talk about tech and shoot cool video of tech. And she's been on a tear for some gaming and Switch content. Number three is some doofus in a silly hat with a punchable face talking about the OnePlus 8 versus the Velvet. Number four, Josh Vergara's iPhone SE top five complaints and takeaways. Number five, the SGG QA creator chat with Issa Rodriguez, Issa Does Tech. Then my boy, LFA Reviews, top five true wireless earbuds under $50. We've got TechSpert, best budget smartphones under £300. This is, again, TechSpert has 300,000 subscribers. Great content, regular updates on, what kind of phones are out there at different prices. He's good. I don't want to make the whole channel TechSpert because I feel like with 300,000 subscribers, he's probably doing pretty good. Josh Vergara looking at the Sony ZV-1, a birthday vlog. We've got, this one was one of my favorite posts of the last week from Painfully Honest Tech. $400 studio monitors versus $1,250 wireless speakers. We've got Steve Litchfield taking a look at the Xperia 1 Mark II review, looking at the camera quality on the Sony Xperia. We've got some Xiaomi. We've got TK Bay controlling your smartphone with your voice. This is a new one, Digital Slang, 3,900 subscribers, so under 4,000 subscribers looking at some true wireless earbuds. This last week on Glowing Rectangles was hopping. So I put this plea out there every week. I don't think it's ever been more true than it was last week. But if you haven't been to reddit.com/r/glowingrectangles, when you go, you'll probably find one or more content creators you've never seen before, and they'll probably become must-watch creators on your YouTube feed or in your RSS reader, whatever it is that you use to consume content. It was a really fun week on the subreddit, and it was also our largest week of growth. So I think we were in the high 960s last week. We are now at 993 members. We are closing in on 1,000
1,000 subscribers for Our Glowing Rectangles. I'm really excited about that because this is true, organic, grassroots growth. We're not piggybacking on like, well, let's make every video from SuperSaf and Mr. Mobile, and then we'll also feature a couple smaller players and we'll build popularity, and then I'll also set up 10 different fake accounts so I can boost those numbers. I've just been letting it ride, and it's been growing on its own, and every week I'm seeing someone new posting, I'm seeing someone new sharing, but we can always use more help. If you want to share the subreddit, or if you want to go, don't be stingy with the upvotes. Again, this helps popularize content, and it might make this a better content farm. So if something's popular on our Glowing Rectangles, it might show up on our Android, or our technology, or our Futurology, or our Apple, or something like that. That can blow up a YouTube channel's or a readership for a blog. It can help a lot. So reddit.com/r/glowingrectangles. I think we're going to do a community live stream when we break 1,000 subscribers. I think I'm going to host a celebratory 1,000 members on Glowing Rectangles when we get there. I mean, we had our biggest week of growth this last week. So I was really excited to see that. I was really expecting to hit 1,000 probably closer to end of August, maybe beginning of September. And it's looking like we'll probably get there by the end of July, if not faster. So reddit.com/r/glowingrectangles, a place to talk about all the best tech toys. I hope you'll check it out. And I hope you'll participate, because it's more than just watching a piece of content and shrugging and going, hey, that was cool, I hope they make more. Content creators need all the support they can get these days, and active participation is what makes the difference. So if you like something, give it a share. Talk about it. Leave comments. Upvote it on Reddit. Right now, online content creation is in a very precarious position. So if you enjoy this stuff, especially because you get almost all of this stuff for free, some effort to help, spread the word, comment on it, anything, greatly appreciated. And Gabaletta, just to put it out there, I really enjoyed that last creator chat. Issa was a phenomenal guest. I really enjoyed taking the time to chat that out with her. It was a very enlightening conversation for myself. And even my girlfriend, who isn't a tech nerd, enjoyed it too. It's the one I'm trying to get my wife to listen to, because she hasn't caught up on all of my creator chats, and I think she'd really like what Issa has to say. All right, 10:08. We've got a lot of gadget stuff to talk about. So let's get into the gadget block. Get this out of the way here. I want to start this off with a minor bummer into something that could be potentially kind of interesting, especially something that broke this morning, courtesy of Gary the Fireman. Kind of put it under my nose when I tweeted out about what the show rundown should look like. I asked, what should we talk about? And Gary piped right up with a great breaking news article. So, I mean, it's a little bit of a bummer, but it's not a major bummer. It's not too much of a surprise, but it's just odd timing. A lot of people make a noise about Google discontinuing the affordable Pixel 3a and 3a XL phones. It will only be available from retail partners while supplies last. This is written up by Mariella Moon over in Engadget. Google has officially discontinued its Pixel 3a and 3a XL phones. It is confirmed in a statement sent to Android Police. It was previously marked out of stock on the U.S. Google store, but now its listing says it's already unavailable. They sent out a statement, quote, Google Store has sold through its inventory and completed sales of Pixel 3a for people who are still interested in buying Pixel 3a. The product is available from some partners while supplies last. So I know a lot of people are, so here's the deal. Google, massive company, right? We're talking Alphabet. We're talking enormous company. Google is not one thing. It's kind of like saying government and ignoring the fact that government is a
ridiculous spider web of individuals, people, commissions, agencies that are all sort of brokering or bickering over power with checks and balances. Google is a ridiculously loosely organized structure that isn't always conducive to making sure the entire behemoth is operating as a cohesive brand identity. When we factor in the situation that we find ourselves in today and how disruptive that's been to component pricing, licensing, distribution, shipping, everything, manufacturing took a hit bad this year. And I think every single manufacturer has faced significant disruption to how they would normally get a product out to market. Google's no exception. And I have to believe that the Pixel team at Google is given some good resources, but they're probably not funded internally to the same degree that, you know, like Samsung budgets for Galaxy smartphones. So I completely appreciate, and to a degree, I do agree with some of the sentiment that, like, oh, well, this is such a fail on Google's part that they're discontinuing one phone before they've announced their next phone. And I get that. I kind of feel like Google is sort of in an impossible position right now because the writing's been on the wall. The Pixel 4 kind of helped verify this tech nerd rage over some phones that get to be expensive and then some phones not being worth it enough. Every time I pick up my Pixel 4 XL, it's kind of a wonderful homecoming. I would probably be using it more if it had 5G, just because I get terrible LTE reception in my neighborhood. But, you know, I'm writing up an article on it right now because I feel like the Pixel 4 was like the most slighted phone of last year, and that if you really used it or if you lived with it and it wasn't just a part of your reviewer collection, then you had a very different experience than reviewers did on a beautifully responsive and powerful phone. So yeah, I get the, you know, oh, they need to announce. But what does that mean? What does that bother? You know, they're running out the manufacturing line on the Pixel 3a. I'm really glad that my brother got a Pixel 3a at the beginning of this year, because I was kind of thinking maybe he should wait. He really wanted a Pixel. My sister has a Pixel. They're big Pixel fans now. I'm glad that I sort of nudged him to just go ahead and grab it, because I think he got it for like $280, maybe. No, it was under $300. And he signed up for Google Fi service at the same time. And like, that's a stonking goodbye. I can't really point to much that for what he would need or what he would want that would be better. And we didn't wait, because if we had waited, he'd still be on a busted old phone. He'd probably be really mad at me that this new Pixel never really arrived. So what I feel that this is probably indicative of is a significant reorg. The A series was a little clumsy, right? You had the Pixel 3, and then we went a while, and then we launched the Pixel 3a right before launching the Pixel 4. So this split year strategy doesn't really work that well. The Pixel 3a sold great, but it's a clumsy way to be actively selling a new Pixel 3a alongside a new Pixel 4. So for 2020, we were already seeing some indication that Google was going to pivot, that the whatever was going to be the Pixel 5 was probably going to be sort of reined in a bit costs-wise, make it more of a mid-ranger, an upper-tier mid-ranger solution, something that would compete against a Galaxy A70, the LG Velvet that I've been playing with, which is a gorgeous phone, and just some way that they could avoid the higher component costs from Qualcomm and still offer a great experience. And I still argue, for most people, if you were to put a Pixel 3a in their hands today, Google's software optimization would overcome a lot of this perceived idea need for more horsepower power from the chipset. everyone I've handed the Pixel 3a to and let them kind of poke around on it, no issues. None at all. Like, it feels indistinguishable from basically any other premium smartphone, in their opinion. I have not encountered that average consumer who's felt like it was a deal breaker at all. So Gary the Fireman sent over this, coming by way of pigtow.com. So I don't know how much stock to put into this. I'm usually not the biggest rumors and leaks kind of guy, but this is getting a bit of a spread based on CAD design renders. This could be what the Pixel 5 looks like. I'm screen sharing this right now. Apologies to those of you just listening, but this could be an interesting pivot. It has the square camera module from the Pixel 4 with two lenses on it, but we probably aren't completely sure what those are. There's a hole punch, upper left corner hole punch selfie camera, a rear mounted fingerprint sensor, and we don't know a whole lot about it. Like, nothing's really been properly confirmed, but on the CAD renders, it looks like there's no headphone jack on the bottom of the phone. I don't think we've got a render for the top of the phone. Let me just see. Oh, there's one that's got kind of a top edge, but we don't properly see. Nope, there doesn't seem to be any headphone jack. So it would make sense to me, looking at this as a leak of what a potential Pixel 5 design might look like, why not just smash the A and the number together? Save costs, use a 700 series Snapdragon processor, bring some of the benefits of the Pixel A series, like the rear mounted fingerprint sensor, which is obviously superior to face scanning, bring that over. But then also you have some of the annoying premium decisions, like getting rid of the headphone jack. And we arrive somewhere, I don't know, I would hope in that $600 territory for a 5G capable device that can go head to head with a Galaxy A71, but with Google software optimizations, maybe hopefully some custom silicon inside that Pixel. And it's a snappy, brutal, quick performer that feels way more premium than, you know, like what the 700 series chipsets feel like in other phones. So that could be. I don't know how likely that is, but we are looking at something that's very similar to a Pixel 4a, but with dual cameras and no headphone jack. So build quality is going to matter, screen display quality is going to matter, but this could be something that's an interesting competitor to, say, a Nord. Sentinel 909, if there's no headphone jack, I am totally not getting this phone. Kyle Ruggles, solely. And if I'm looking at this render here, if we're basing anything on this render here, then I would say I don't believe there's going to be any solely on this phone. I don't think that top bezel is big enough to put radar, and there's no other notch or front facing hardware. I'd be very surprised if they could fit a radar gesture scanning device in this top edge of the bezel here. DTNL, I hope they stick with this design for the 700 series device, objectively more practical than other flagships. Everything's more practical except that I wish it had a headphone jack. Like Matt Tyler is very aggressively saying it's the Pixel 4a, it's not the 5, it's the 4a. But the 4A leaks that we saw only had a single camera and a headphone jack. Single camera and a headphone jack was Pixel 4A. And Pixel 5 was that weird, like, toilet lid camera module on the back. So again, why not stop pretending that we've got multiple phone lines? A Pixel 4A with a Snapdragon 675 isn't going to be substantially different than a Pixel 5 with a 765. So instead of incurring the costs of making two separate phones that are going to perform nearly identical in every single test that you can run, except for gaming, where the 765 is a little better for gaming, why not just smush them together? Save on your manufacturing runs. focus the consumer to just understand Pixel. This is the one line of Pixel, and this can be a sort of a gimme year when the industry and the market and the economy are at their worst. Coast, and then hopefully by the end of 2022, we've got a Pixel out there with custom Google chips inside. Google silicon in the Pixel, as opposed to trying to do business with Qualcomm and being beholden to Qualcomm for all of their kit. Gary the Fireman, my kingdom for the rear fingerprint scanner on the back of the Pixel 5. Vazicos 8, any chance for Google to go Dimensity 800 or 1000? Now, in the past, I would have said maybe, but I'm really hoping they just decide to make their own. I really like this idea. Samsung chip fabrication based on Google's hardware designs for making a custom chip for the Pixel that they can completely control the software hardware optimization of that experience. I really want to see MediaTek in more devices coming here to the United States, but I also want to see more competition in chipsets. So it'd be cool. Like, I think a Dimensity 1000 would be fine. I'd love to get my hands on one and see how that compares against Qualcomm mid-range. But more than anything else, I want to see Google make their own, because I really want to see what Google hardware software synergy would look like if we ever want an iPhone for Android. That's our only hope. Tech homie, headphone jacks are helpful. MCVP18, I actually kind of like the toilet lid on the early leaked Pixel 5. I thought it looked pretty good. I can't help but call it that because that's what that made me laugh. But it was a different take on this big square or rectangle module that I think looks like garbage. I really hate the look of a domino sticking out the back of my phone for an array of cameras. The last one woke. Google always underclocks their processors. I'd rather just have the 765G and call it a year, especially if they are designing their own chips. The thing about Google, I still don't think the Pixel 4 got enough credit. So the Pixel 4 scored very poorly for Geekbench. Synthetic benchmarks, that phone did not perform well. But Google has custom signal processing hardware. So if you take a Pixel 4 and you render or transcode 4K video on a Pixel 4, it is still competitive against an iPhone 11 A13 Bionic. It is still competitive against Snapdragon 865s. The Pixel 4 is an absolute screamer when it comes to some of the heaviest lifting image processing that a phone can do. Anyone who's out there, oh, well, it needs to be better. There's nothing better. It is shockingly fast and will run consistently at higher thermals and putting out faster output. But again, you've actually got to use it for a real world test. If you just throw a synthetic benchmark at it, you're going to get terrible scores. But that's not real life. Benchmarks aren't real life. You should be upset with reviewers who look at a Geekbench score and stop, as opposed to really using the device to do things with that phone. And that's why we should hold reviewers to a different standard than average consumers. I don't need someone with millions of YouTube subscribers telling me how my grandmother might use a phone. I already know how my grandmother might use a phone. I want to see them use the phone to its limits and share those experiences with their audience. Matt Tyler, real, like the Pixel 4 XL performed better than so many more powerful phones I've used. Benchmarks are a number for companies to push. It's not everything. From Jim 72165, why does Google have to have a premium phone? What's wrong with them making a quality phone for a reasonable price? And that's why I'm excited to see what they can do in this sort of mid-tier market. Again, the Pixel 4 was not deal-breaker expensive if you really put it head-to-head against an iPhone or a top-of-the-line Galaxy. You know, like, we seem to have this mental block where
we accept Apple starting at $1,000, you know, Samsung, you know, that high 900s. Oh, but Pixel, that can't be competitive if it's starting at like $899. It probably could. Matt Tyler, unfortunately, the Pixel 5 is going to get bashed by so many reviewers. I mean, again, I mean, there's a trained response, right? I bring up Pixel, and immediately I see people in the live chat saying like, oh, well, they're failing because of this, and they can't do that. And you're like, hold on. Moving right along, I'm very curious. Get your keyboard commenting fingers ready, because I'm kind of torn on this, and I'm unfortunately in the wait and see camp. How are you all feeling about the rumor? Excuse me. Apple surveys customers on old chargers amid rumors that the iPhone 12 won't include a charger in the box. Picked up another story from Mashable. Is Apple really going to stop including the power adapter in box for your brand new iPhone? These surveys may be hinting that, at the very least, the company is strongly considering it. Two people have recently posted screenshots on Twitter of an Apple survey they received after purchasing a new iPhone. The survey specifically asks what each user what they did with the charger from their old iPhone. Choices were give it to a family member or friend. I recycled it. I lost or misplaced it. No longer working or not working well. Still using it at home. So this has been kind of one of the blow up stories of the last week. Again, it's Apple. So if you need good clickbaity, easy YouTube fodder, you can just put Apple and charger in a YouTube video and your channel will do better than mine and you'll make more money than I do. That's why the name of this podcast has Apple Charger in the title of this podcast. sorry, just a little bit of bitterness there. Whew, happy Monday. So we've been talking about this a lot. Matt talked about it last night with Zach on Across the Podcast. What are we thinking? Start hitting some comments here. What does it mean if Apple pulls another part of their accessory strategy out of the box for an iPhone? I'm going to start this conversation off. I think this is going to be bad in the short term. I think it's going to be really bad in the short term, but it has the potential to be good in the long term. I miss the days of cell phones and smartphones where you'd get a box and you'd open it and there'd be a case or a holster, there'd be additional accessories that were related to the phone. Sometimes there'd even be an additional battery when phones could swap batteries. There'd be a cable and a charger. The entire experience was sort of contained by the manufacturer in that box. Increasingly, we've been kind of piecemealing out, right? So we remove features from the phone. That kind of breaks the phone experience, and then you as the consumer are responsible for replacing that feature. Pull out a headphone jack. Well, now you need to get some solution to listen to audio. And now we're not even going to include a headphone adapter in the box. You even have to buy one of those. And Apple has been leading this charge on their products for a while. You probably still use Ethernet. Oh, we're going to pull that. Now you can buy a $50 dongle so that you can plug in an Ethernet cable again. This is supremely frustrating at this time right now because I feel like consumers rightfully have a sense that they've been getting gouged. Tech has been getting better. These products are getting more powerful. But to what end is that power actually being applied? So your iPhone 11 Pro is capable of, you know, really fast 4K video rendering and complex video projects. And now we care about that Apple is kind of leading my benchmarking again, where they'd fallen way behind Qualcomm powered phones for years. I do things like that. I am a content creator. I cut a lot of video on my phones and also for family and friends. Like I don't really send out unedited video. I shoot some video and I do something cute with my daughter. We went out for a bike ride yesterday morning, shot a bunch of video, and it got cut up and put to a soundtrack of Daft Punk. And then I sent that off to my mom so grandma could see her granddaughter riding her bike. I do things like that. I want more people to be doing things like that. But it's getting a bit much. There are rumors that the iPhone 12, not the 12 Pro or the 12 Pro Max or the 12 Pro LMNOP edition, but the 12, the phone that's supposed to replace the iPhone 11 in the mid-range, is going to start at $650. So what does that mean? That means we're going to give Apple a whole bunch of wonderful headlines. Look at this. iPhone 12 replacing the iPhone 11, and it's $50 cheaper. Who says Apple's too expensive? Look at this against a $700 OnePlus 8. Wowzers, this is so great. What an awesome deal. Apple is killing it. They're crushing it. There's no reason to buy an Android now that iPhones finally copied app drawers and Windows Phone widgets. Now you can get an iPhone for cheaper than a premium 5G Android. But what's going to happen? You're going to get the iPhone and you're going to need a charger for it. Cable's going to be in the box, but what? Another $20, $30 just to get some kind of charge brick? Cases. There aren't going to be earbuds. The rumor is they're going to get rid of ear pods in the box. So you got to buy some headphones. I mean, you could get some terrible cabled earbuds, but why not step up to some $200 AirPods or some $250 AirPods Pros? And suddenly that $50 price savings that you had just to buy the phone is completely eroded and outpaced by the accessories you need to purchase. And this is a trend that I feel consumers are rightfully getting frustrated with. Because then it's not just going to be point of sale on Apple.com. It's going to be you walk into a carrier store, you know, you could buy the phone. We'll sell you a $650 iPhone. But if you step up to this $800 package, you'll make sure your phone has a case and a holster and earbuds and a screen protector that we'll apply here in the store. And we'll put that $800 iPhone 12 on your monthly bill. So you don't have to pay us $800. You don't have to pay us $150 for all of your accessories. We'll partition it out so that you're only paying $40 a month. Huh? How's that? What a great deal. How convenient. So that's my immediate short term. I think it's a bummer. I'm trying to check myself as a tech reviewer because I've got way too many charge bricks. Like I have way too many charge adapters, AC outlet adapters. I every 6 months I kind of walk a trash bag of terrible e-waste over to this recycling facility that's set up by the city here in Los Angeles for like toxic chemicals and electronics, consumer electronics, and it's the only place I found that just sort of takes all of my junk. And that bag is sort of filled up with all of the additional chargers and cables and adapters and just all of the plastic junk that gets generated by selling phones. The longer term opportunity is making sure that we're sticking to good standards, and it's an opportunity to inform consumers on spending a bit more, but for a better longer term solution. You know, Anker, Rav Power, these other brands have a chance now to step up and say, you know, here's a strategy that you can use, and here's a product that we sell, and we're certified, and you know, we've got, you know, a warranty, and this is how you can make this better. But I fear like what's probably going to happen more is, oh no, my phone didn't have a charger in the box and I need a second charger. Let me just go pick up this cheap thing that I got at a gas station. Oh no, it set my phone on fire. In the short term, I think we're going to see a lot of that uninformed consumer experience, which then hopefully will train consumers to say, you know, it matters if I buy
a nicer charge brick from this reputable manufacturer because it's going to treat my phone better. So let me go through. I know we've got a lot of comments in on this one. It's been a very divisive story. My feeling is hopefully this is a better move for just garbage e-waste because I don't use those Apple Power Bricks. They're crap. I hate them. They're so slow. JMX Warrior, Apple should ask at point of sale, do you need a charger? No, we'll leave it out of the box. And same for the mobile operator stores. The last one, I feel that when Apple pulls a charger and OEMs following, if they want to pull the charger, I need to push USB-C, which should be considered a mobile standard. Now, one of the things is that actually should help adoption for USB-C, USB power delivery. It'll probably be a good competitive shot against Qualcomm Quick Charge. Not that I have anything against Qualcomm Quick Charge. It's just if there's one standard, I kind of feel the USB group standard should become sort of the general accepted charging standard. The same thing that works for laptops, notebooks, tablets, and phones. And then there can be a couple other flavors like Warp or QC for companies that want to roll their own. Or Huawei, the super, is it supercharger? SuperVOOC on Oppo? From Vazicos 8, I think Apple is testing the waters with what they can get away with. Dave Burns, it's going to be good overall for the planet. Sentinel 909, I couldn't even stomach to watch the whole MKBHD video on the issue. It's hilarious to listen to the excuses and the logic gymnastics needed to excuse such behavior. I feel it's a complicated issue. Zach brought up some great points on Across the Podcast where consumers aren't properly educated on tech. If you have an iPhone, try talking to some of your less tech-savvy relatives about like MFI certifications. I want you to go to the store. I want you to look at the side of the package, and I want you to look for this label. That seems like it should be pretty simple. It is proving to not be simple. Like, again, I love bringing this up. You know, like my uncle is really tech savvy, but we're in a Zoom call and one of my cousins had set up this cute little game quiz on, I can't forget what that service's name is, but she's like, okay, all you need to do is go to this website. Well, I installed this app and now it's telling me I need to approve these permissions. Uncle, go to this website. How did you end up in an app store downloading an app and putting in user information to play this game? Go to the website. So again, I can totally see where someone is having that conversation, maybe with some parents or some grandparents. Go to a Best Buy, pick up the box, look on the side of the box. Do you see MFI? Well, I bought this one that's got Hello Kitty on it.
Oh, you didn't listen at all, did you?
Your phone's going to explode. You just turned your phone into a bomb. But why this feels so divisive is because Apple's business strategy depends on selling an incomplete product that you then complete with other accessories. You know, cases, screen protectors, Apple Care, dongles, adapters, Bluetooth. You need a Mac if you want to use AirDrop. So your phone is incomplete to send files unless you also own a MacBook. We don't put enough storage on the base model phone. 64 gigabytes of storage is ridiculous. So you need to either upgrade it and also pay for more iCloud. Everything is another turn of the screw for profitability. And it feels like people are starting to get a little tired of that, but where else are they going to go? Now, if you're in the Apple ecosystem, it's really hard to leave. It is not easy to just flip that switch. From Al's Bockley, you're sure Apple is just not getting users ready for the potential iPhone 13 being without ports, as there have been rumors. God, and you know, like, again, if we're concerned about e-waste, just imagine when we go portless iPhone and then all of those lightning cables, all of those charge adapters, everything has to change.
Oh, now instead of just having a cable that you can plug into your phone, you need to have a Qi charger in your home, by your bedside table, in your car. Portless iPhone is going to be like the death of the smartphone. At that point, I'm done. Why bother? You know, you're letting Apple dictate like the worst possible aspects of smartphone design. A portless iPhone means smartphones are dead.
Hey, podcast listeners. I work really hard to find mutually beneficial ways to support production on my various distribution platforms. Instead of just running ads on this podcast and hoping they don't annoy you, I want to find products or services that you really will get something out of and that can help fund my production. While I do talk about some of those items in ads throughout this podcast, I've never created one easy-to-view master list of my current partnerships until now. Sorry, I couldn't help myself. If you'd like to help contribute, support production of this podcast and my various videos and reviews, head on over to somegadgetguy.com. At the top, there's going to be a link for Support Some Gadget Guy, and you can see what my current partnerships are. At the time this podcast was recorded, in addition to my Patreon, we can hook you up with a $10 voucher for shopping a new OnePlus, save 20% on some One More headphones, sign you up for Google Fi service, Amazon affiliate links, Audible, or you can grab a Mega Pickle coffee mug of your very own. Savory, delicious Mega Pickles. Head on over to SomeGadgetGuy.com, support banner on the top right-hand side of my website, and hopefully you find something cool, something you like, while also kicking me a little extra scratch.
The last graphene batteries. Matt Tyler, Apple needs to make sure they don't accidentally make things worse, or at least put an ad that shows certified chargers and what to look for to make sure you're getting a safe one. Again, like, I agree, but I'm sure there's a website, a help topic buried somewhere on Apple.com. You can go into their Apple forums and they've got all the information listed there. It's so simple. So you can tell, you know, like your 70-year-old Aunt Carol, just go to Apple and search for this topic and you'll get all the information you need. And Apple's done their due diligence. That's all they need to do. A DJNL, the I in the iPhone stands for incomplete. So I think there's potential here because it would be better to have higher quality products that last beyond a single phone purchase. Chargers that can communicate with multiple devices and gadgets. You know, you spend a little bit more for a power brick that's going to charge up your laptop, and then it's using a good spec that it can also communicate with the phone with USB power delivery. That to me is better in the long term. Anytime we make a transition like this, it's going to suck. And just like I was pissed off when Apple took the headphone adapter out of the box, I think it's another anti-consumer move to remove EarPods. Because again, all it does is encourage like, well, I mean, you could buy these EarPods and they're okay, but you need to buy Bluetooth and that's going to be way better. It's so frustrating. Lightning is another connector that should just be regulated out of existence. So, Dave Burns, do we even enjoy using our phones anymore? Well, that's a very good question because Gizmodo and Samsung would say, not only do you enjoy it, you want your phone to look pretty in copper. Isn't that pretty special? You know? So again, blowing up the internets, this is a major story. I mean, there are a ton of phones that we could be talking about, but instead what we should do is look at Samsung's Russian website accidentally leaked. Oh, the picture gets smaller on Gizmodo when you click on it. That's helpful. This is what the Galaxy Note 20 is going to look like. Again, it's a leak when Samsung purposely put it out there on a Russian website. But this is what the Note's going to look like in sort of a, I forget what they're calling this, a rose goldy kind of copper. It looks pretty sharp. I think it looks pretty. I still hate this camera module setup that Samsung is using. I really do not like that big chunk on the back of the Galaxy S and this Note. And I worry that because you've got all of this surface area glass, if this is going to be as easy to break as the camera modules that look like they explode
on the Galaxy S20s. But we've got some rumors and specs, what the screen size is going to be, if it's going to be a Snapdragon 865 or if Samsung's going to get a plus version of the 865. But really, it just kind of seems at this point, the Note really is just an S20 with an S Pen. So if you want an S20 Plus and you want an S Pen, then that's what this Note is going to be. Get this out of the way here. The last one woke. I used my last Samsung phone, just got pushed an ad for Netflix. You got an ad. Ads will look great on a copper phone. I don't get Samsung. I'm never going to buy another one of their TVs. It bugs me so much that I spent a lot of money on a good Samsung TV and like it starts serving me ads, and it's got that annoying like Samsung TV Plus that we'll never watch and we can't get rid of it, but it's sort of defaulting to the Young Turks channel. Like, F that. Oh, this is terrible. I'm gonna try and make sure my next TV is completely smart brainless, and I'll just hook another box up to it. So I mean, the rumors that we've also seen pointing to, like, it's going to be a metal S Pen. That could be kind of cool. But I'm really struggling. Like, I didn't spend any time with the Galaxy S20 this year because I was planning on going back to cover it. And I did not plan on the situation sort of disrupting everything. So I never really did get to revisit the Galaxy S20 like I'd planned to. I'm going to see if I can make something happen with a Note 20. But if a Note 20 is basically just an S20 with an S Pen, I don't feel like it's going to be worth me buying one, making a couple videos on it, and those videos won't really perform all that well. So if anyone has any thoughts, let me know. Like, do you feel really strongly about Note 20 reviews at this point? Let me know. Hit me up. Social media. Because another thing that's just kind of a little interesting that I want to, but I kind of want to sneak in. This is coming by themrphone.com, news on Samsung. Coming to India, Samsung is pushing Galaxy Assured. Sorry, let me get a drink of water. I'm starting to get a little froggy. I'm probably going to be really froggy. All right, Galaxy Assured and Galaxy Forever. So, the Galaxy Assured service is a plan to avail buyback offers from Samsung. You can enjoy this offer for phones like the Galaxy S20 series, Note 10 Lite, and S10 Lite 512 gig edition. The Galaxy Assured consumers can get buyback value up to 70% of the original device price. So, if you have a 3-month-old Galaxy S20, you can get 70% of that back from Samsung. If your device is 6 months old, you can get 60% buyback. 60%. I really need to make this clear. Right now, if you hit Swappa on like a used OnePlus 8 Pro, you're going to shave about $100 off of a brand new OnePlus 8 Pro. Samsung is rapidly devaluing the aftermarket sales of their phones. They have these aggressive buy-in, trade-in programs, which I've heard some complaints about how when you send a phone in, it's valued at one price, and then you might not get that when they actually receive the phone. And now their buyback, 40% of the phone value gone in 6 months. Samsung is actively trying to wreck the aftermarket sales. I mean, they're one of the biggest sellers in the world. They're the number one for Android. Making these phones more disposable and worth less over time so that your main option is just, if I want the best trade-in value, I should give my phone to Samsung as a trade-in as opposed to trying to sell it online. Because if I wait and sell it after 6 months, it's going to be worth half what I paid for it. I mean, I really, that is absolutely shocking. 6 months before, and again, before like there's another new Samsung Galaxy S30 out, your phone has lost 40% of its value, according to Samsung. That's insane. Aditya Anil, you lose 30% in 3 months. Whew, not great. Not great at all. Dave Burns, it's almost as bad as buying a car and driving it off the lot. I really feel like we're losing some human dignity in how these products are manufactured, how we source all of the raw materials for them, the conditions of the employees who actually assemble them and put them together. It's pretty rough. That's pretty rough. All right, so let's wrap this up. Last story in the gadget block. And I was reading through the comments. Not a lot of folks really feeling all that excited for Note 20. Maybe I'll try and pick up a loaner closer to the end of the year and just do sort of a look back on that. I'd always planned on doing that for the Galaxy S20, but man, that one missed me. So I really feel like I should cover something Samsung. But maybe I'll cover a Galaxy A series, and that'll be my one Samsung phone for 2020. Speaking of phones that are more mid-rangery, Standard 137 says hey. So everyone say hey to Standard 137. Speaking of phones that are a bit more mid-rangery, I think one of the more anticipated, rumory, less expensive devices that it's going to be hitting the market, I've been seeing a lot of chatter on the OnePlus Nord. So Android Central, here's your first look at the OnePlus Nord. If you go to the OnePlus.Nord Instagram account, they've got this little teaser video up where a young lady is doing something. I've got to mute this because I don't want to wreck. And this is probably going to get stricken for copyright. Puts a little phone in her pocket, and we see her using that phone. And they got one good screen grab of this video, where we can see what is ostensibly the OnePlus Nord. And to me, it looks a little like we're in Galaxy S10e territory. Very much, much flatter sides, a flat screen. I don't see any interruption on the glass in the top bezel. I mean, I'm really doing my obnoxious forensics examination here, but that to me would be a really fun device form factor to come back to. Using the OnePlus 8 and the LG Velvet, it is kind of reinforcing how I don't really love curved glass, super thin edged screen and bezel devices. So if OnePlus is coming with the Nord, flat sides, flat front face, that could be kind of nice. So I think our rumors are pointing probably we do have some sort of loose confirmation. I want to say it was Tech Radar. I've got a Tech Radar story here. OnePlus Nord chipset 5G and three key focuses. So we are looking at a Qualcomm processor. There was some talks of OnePlus maybe going with a MediaTek. That seems to be debunked now. But looking at a 5G capable phone, 700 series Snapdragon processor, and I don't know. A lot of folks are roughly saying somewhere in $500 territory. And that to me kind of vibes. We see sort of a streamlined OnePlus approach to making a Snapdragon 700 series phone. I would assume you could probably cut $100 off of what Samsung and LG are doing. You, again, probably not going to. I've got the Velvet here. We're sort of positioning this somewhere around $600 to $650. For a Snapdragon 765 against a OnePlus Nord, I would imagine you probably wouldn't have wireless charging. You probably won't have any IP certification, like the A71 and the Velvet are IP68. You probably won't have a memory card slot like these phones do. And I would imagine you'd probably also scale back on the cameras a little bit, especially opposite the OnePlus 8. So again, the Nord chipset to chipset is going to be a stonking good buy just looking at power and performance.
something tells me that the argument is going to be made up on what features will these different devices support. You know, like, do you want a Note-like competitor with active pen and stylus capabilities? Well, the Nord's not going to do that. So again, I'm really anxious to see what it is they come out with. This is exactly the sort of next step where if 5G is going to reach any kind of inflection point, or if people are going to start caring about 5G support in their devices, it can't only exist at $700 and above. Even $700 is kind of a rough retail strategy for average consumers out there today. And as much as 5G has completely fixed some of my issues on T-Mobile out in the suburbs, that's likely not the immediate experience that a lot of people are going to have around the country. The last one woke saying Nord at $350 to $399. How many people think we're really going to come in on a 5G Nord under $400? I do not think that's gonna fly. Again, we're talking Qualcomm component pricing. You have to get licensing and carrier certifications, antenna arrays. I have to believe that even on a lower powered chipset, that the battery is going to have to be a little larger in the Nord to make up for that 5G radio. I'll be very surprised if we're significantly below $499. I'll be happy. I'll want to have that. But unless we're willing to compromise on a lot and really kind of build a phone more like a TCL 10L with 5G, I don't think OnePlus is going to do that. I think OnePlus has been positioning their brand a bit more upscale, and now they want something that's going to be a nicer mid-range option. And I think they're going to look at the A71 and they're going to look at the Velvet and say, how can we beat them by $100? And I think that's where Nord is gonna make its big key argument. And then everyone's going to, you know, whine and moan and complain, but I can't get a Poco. And like, I don't care. Poco can't really sell here in the United States. They don't get any of the carrier licensing agreements in place. There's no infrastructure. There's no support. I don't care about Poco. It'd be fun to play with, I'm sure. And it represents a great bargain in the regions where you can buy one. It doesn't exist here. So unfortunately, I can't really play with one. Kyle Ruggles. So like $676 Canadian. I got my OnePlus 6 8 gig 128 for $768 Canadian. All right, that's not too bad. Dave Burns, $400 if it has an LCD panel. It makes me sad that we actually, I mean, like, I was using my wife's G7. And you're like, oh, you know, this screen is actually pretty nice. It's a shame. Better LCD displays. I don't know. For all of the people complaining, like, I have a bunch of OnePlus haters on my OnePlus 8 Pro review. Why didn't you talk about the green tint? Why didn't you talk about the screen problems? Why didn't you talk about the green tint? And you're like, first of all, I've never seen your usernames before. Well, some of them I have, but most of them I haven't. And two, we're seeing green tint affecting Samsung phones all the way back to the S8. There was like another story published last week about recent software causing green tint on Galaxy S8s and Galaxy Note 8s. And I don't see any of those comments on my Samsung videos. What happened? We really care about green tint on the OnePluses, but Samsung sells way more phones than OnePlus does. We don't care about green tint as much on Galaxy S20s and Galaxy Note 10s and Galaxy S10s and Galaxy S9s and Galaxy Note 9s and Galaxy S8s and Galaxy Note 8s. We only care about it on the OnePlus 8 Pro. Okay, sure. They're great. Thanks, Kyle Ruggles. I needed that. So this is an issue that we need to keep an eye on for OLEDs. OLED manufacturing and how we drive screens and the software we use it are causing some issues. And
that's a reliability thing. But across the industry, we've all kind of agreed that OLEDs are the way to go. So unfortunately, that means on basically every single manufacturer, we're going to need to keep an eye out on long-term burn-in issues, black crush, green tint, the response rates. We've probably bitten off a bit more than we could chew, and now we'll need to kind of ride that out. But you know what would help is if we had some competing screen standard that we could also use. Because if it were good, then a consumer would have an option to shop a phone that doesn't have those kinds of problems. Route 95. On that note, isn't it fun how many passes Apple got on all the hardware defects that they've had on so many products in the last several years? Dave Burns. I personally hate options. Thank you very much. And Shaka Zulu. Samsung Knights charging at them windmills. Completely agree. Well, folks, we are right at 2 hours. And my voice is getting fuzzy, so I think we should probably start wrapping this up. But lots of rumors out there. Some interesting and some fun conversations. And for those of you listening to me, watching the live stream or listening to me on the audio version, hit me up. I am very curious what your thoughts are on things like getting rid of charging adapters. We have huge problems in the tech community with disposable products, planned obsolescence, creating mountains of e-waste. When I said that I take a trash bag to this recycling center every 6 months or so, I'm not talking about like some dorm room little, shopping bag sack. I'm talking a full-on, filled to the brim, lawn and leaf garbage bag of crap that I have to take to this recycling center. And I do that twice a year because of how much junk and packaging and plastic and electronics are generated with me being a reviewer. So we obviously need to confront this disposability in our consumer electronics, but how we do it is going to be just as important as acknowledging that problem. Super critical. It feels good to say, oh, we need to do something about this. What we choose to do is, it's going to be rough. The transition is going to suck. Okay, so folks, I'm trying not to turn this podcast into a bummer. Gary the Fireman, RIP Charlie Daniels, age 83. That does kind of hurt my soul just a little bit. I'm going to have to fire up a playlist and listen to some good music while I finish up some video editing today. So, three-legged couch, that's a very good idea. I should probably do a video on this. I bet other reviewers would follow. Southern Rock US legend. Man, Charlie. Okay. Anyway, let's go ahead and wrap this up. I'll toast to the memory of Devil Went Down to Georgia, break out some fiddles offline. Folks, thank you so much for watching. Some amazing stories to kind of keep our eyes on. I hope that you're engaged. I hope that you're active. I hope that you're participating, because these conversations are exactly the areas where we actually can provide some value. We can be good resources for our family and friends. We can be, annoying flies in the face of our elected officials, just reminding them what their obligations are. We can contribute because we actually enjoy this stuff and we know this stuff. So I hope you're out there having a good time, but then also keeping abreast on everything that's going on in our industry and how it's going to affect not only ourselves, but all of our family and friends, especially in light of recent events that have shown us our relationship with consumer electronics has never been more precious. Our relationship with broadband, online services, communications equipment, it's really heavy stuff. Can still be fun,
maybe more fun than, it should be more fun than I'm probably making it out to be, but it's also pretty serious at the same time. So, for all of you in the live chat, thank you so much for joining. It's always a joy to see all of these faces and all of these usernames popping back up and kind of helping keep a smile on my face. It's a refreshing conversation for me every week. This is the right way for me to start a week and kind of get recharged for all the work that's ahead of us. So folks, on that note, I hope that you are safe. I hope that you're healthy. I hope that you're well-fed. I hope that you're spending time talking to people who care about you. And I want you to have a phenomenal week with your consumer electronics, with your gadgets, with your technology. I want you to do awesome. I want you to be awesome. And I hope you'll join me back next week for another episode of the Monday Morning Tech Chat Show on the SDGQA podcast channel. Be well. Take care. Don't do anything stupid, because I want to see you back here next week. All right? I love you all. Signing off.
Recording voiceover, spoken word, is truly one of my favorite activities. My second favorite hobby is photography. Now, the smartphone might be making us deaf, but we can't deny the awesome power of the phone as a platform for photography and multimedia creation. If you've been looking to improve your mobile photog skills, if you want to produce more professional content, or you're just looking to take your family photos to the next level, I wrote a book to help you out with that. Take Better Photos, Smartphone Photography for Noobs is available on Amazon Kindle. Walking through the basic terminology of photography, covering the settings on your camera, discussing composition and inspiration, and I even include a long list of exercises and challenges to really hone your skills, all with some helpful example photos and diagrams. Search for Take Better Photos, Smartphone Photography for Noobs on Amazon, or use the quick link bit.ly/betterphotosbook to grab your copy today.